And I am your other host, Victoria Malle.
And we're really excited to like hit the books and get really scholarly with our guest today. Today, Dr. Carolyn Reinhardt is joining us.
Hi, everyone. How are you doing today?
We're great. We're so excited to have you here, Carolyn, especially as everyone kind of gets ready to go back to school, because I think a lot of people don't think that fan culture is something that has any academic value. So we're very excited for you to prove literally everyone wrong.
I'll do my best. I love hearing all of my accomplishments. That was lovely.
Isn't it fun?
Something to embrace.
Yeah, we like to hype everyone up at the beginning of the episode. We also usually like to kick off our episodes by asking our guests what they fangirl over. So, Carolyn, what are you a fangirl of?
Oh, there's so many things. Right now, my biggest one is professional wrestling, which is really weird that I would say that. It is, and it's getting bigger, and that's what, and yeah. Especially among women too, which is really fascinating. Yeah, one of my studies I'm doing right now is looking at Slash in professional wrestling fan fiction. Actually, quite a community out there that does that.
Wow, we're coming in at a 10. Awesome. Is there anything else?
Well, I remain a very huge David Tennant fan. I just met him at the Chicago C2E2 this past March, and Good Omens is so good. Right. So, but I remain like a Star Wars fan, a Buffy fan, Doctor Who, Star Trek. Still, I mean, a lot of stuff, really. I was working at a literary agency in Hollywood after I got my undergraduate done. And at the time I thought, well, I wanted to be, you know, a writer director. But then I learned more about the culture behind it. And that was also when I went to my first Comic-Con in San Diego, because it's rather easier back then to do it. And I started thinking about the power that fans had and the power that the people had. And I started really getting interested in that idea of the changes to Hollywood because of people.
That's so cool. I work in the entertainment industry in Los Angeles, so it's very interesting that Hollywood and the power of fans is what brought you to your academic career, because it's, funnily enough, like both Kristen and I studied communication studies with a concentration in media studies and culture in college, and I feel like I'm kind of doing the inverse. Like, studying fan cultures is a big reason that I wanted to come out and work in the industry out here. I work in development and production, and I work for a franchise. It's just so fascinating for me, and I try to contribute whenever possible the importance of fandom and how fans influence a piece of media. And I feel like nowadays that things are, I think, these big media properties embrace and are much more cognizant of the fan cultures and how something will be received by a fandom. So I love that. I love that. It gives me hope that you were able to make a career in fandom starting out in Hollywood.
Yeah. So when I first went to Comic-Con, it was like at the turn of the century. I think actually it was 2001.
Wow.
There twice. And it was before, you know, the big changes really started happening with, like, I guess Halle Berry coming in with Catwoman is usually cited as one of the big changes. Mm.
Yeah, it's so interesting, especially now going to Comic-Con. We went to Comic-Con last year, and it's this very, I'm surprised at how almost like corporate it's become, rather than just like a bunch of fans nerding out together and taking pictures of each other's cosplay and finding some great comic books. We'll have to have you back and discuss that, Carolyn.
Discuss that on our podcast, because I had a fellow researcher come on and we talked about the history of San Diego Comic-Con and how it kind of changed the fan convention industry.
Oh my gosh. Well, after this, everyone, including me, should go listen to that. So as you're talking about, you have kind of like this industry scholar, Carrie Lynn, and then I'm sure you also have fan Carrie Lynn. So when watching or reading one of your favorites, is there much separation between fan and scholar? How do you perceive the relationship of critical examination with the things that you're a fan of?
When I was younger, I had a harder time being more critical of the fandoms that I was a part of. But when I got older, and like my partner has really been good about challenging me on these things.
That's awesome.
After like having these conversations with him, I started being more critical towards it. Like I always had that inkling in the back, I knew they weren't great. I knew there were huge problems with that. And now I'm a little bit more accepting of looking at those problems and looking at the stuff that's coming out that way too. Like I do not like Force Awakens, which was really weird for me because I am such a huge fan.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand your like initial hesitant to critique the things that you love.
What is the value in examining not just the media subjects of popular culture, but also the ways in which fans respond and interact with that media? Because it seems like you've kind of had that that sort of connection.
Well, I'm struggling with this one, that question right now because of the different project I'm working on.
Mm. I sure hope so. I think it's also important to study and critically examine fandom I think fandom obviously is incredibly important, but there's obviously things we need to acknowledge and give some attention to in hopes of resolving and making fandom better. You know, one of our objectives with Your Biggest Fangirl is to explore and develop healthy ways to communicate as fans. So we were really excited to ask you what in particular drew you to writing a book about contentious communications in these fandom communities.
Which that then turned my communication scholar on and said, communication. Online is completely constructed through how we communicate with one another, which means these problems are being created by our communication. And that would mean the way to solve them has to be through our communication. So what is going on and how can we understand the ways in which communication is both causing problems and could potentially solve them?
Examination really does have a lot of implication in just being able to apply it in our communication on social media in a variety of different contexts, you know, like looking at just politics or religion and just like anything that is not fandom. There's a lot that we can learn from how we communicate online in a variety of different contexts.
And I might be like an idealist, but I don't think it's impossible to have good conversations online. I don't think that the constraints of the technology preclude us from having dialogue. I think what's precluding us more is ourselves, and that's what I focus on.
As a fan, have you experienced any of that fracture and contention? And or maybe, have you seen any of that kind of hope where it's like, no, maybe we can come together?
I found some stories when I was interviewing people. I've seen hope, not so much in, well, okay, wait, I will say this. I've also been trying this in terms of politics, and I've been trying to reach out and talk to people who are ideologically different than me in terms of politics. And I have had actually a couple of good experiences with that, where I'm actually friends with people on Twitter who are definitely conservative in relationship to myself. And a couple of them are also because we share fandoms. So we're able to talk about Star Wars and have that be the way to kind of like smooth out our differences.
Wow.
Like now I'm like, I really want to see a study, like kind of examine like a fandom as bridging the political divide. That might have to be my thesis. Once I go to grad school, that'll be my thesis.
It would be interesting because I think right now we have maybe even more indications of it being the opposite, like ways in which your political ideology is causing fractures. I mean, I think you think of Gamergate, you think of the stuff about Max Tredavati and Comicsgate and all of that. But I do think there are ways that if you can acknowledge a shared love, it can start to be a bridge, at least for respect building.
Yeah, for sure. I just know a lot of ways that, I mean, Kristen and I became friends is because we had a shared fandom. So, you know, in a lot of ways, it's a bridge without contention. So why not apply it in these situations where there is contention? It can be, you know, this kind of, I don't want to say neutral, but like maybe a less contentious common ground.
You know, you have at least one thing in common in that.
Yeah.
Like
speaking of that, I'm curious, what are some common, maybe contentious communications that you encounter in your research and in just in your experience in fandom? And do you have any recommendations on how we as fans can better communicate with our peers?
Ship wars and everything, and I think, you know, ship wars of course still go on, but I think it's now become an extra personal attack on people oftentimes. Why do you ship this? Because, oh, it's abusive, and you know, what does that say about you? But it's like people interpret things differently. So yeah, I think just your advice of kind of like just taking a moment, slow down, and just ask questions and see their side, that might improve our relations better.
I do think there is, putting on my psychology hat, there is an issue when it comes to developmental psychology. You think about how people change over time. And there may be this idea that fandom kind of operates in a similar trajectory, that we have to go through certain phases as we grow older. And it may be at younger phases, people are more defensive
growing up and just maturity, but I think there is also a level of fandom maturity in terms of being able to take that step and be like, okay, let me like look at this critically and acknowledge what's wrong with it, or, you know, why do I like it, but I shouldn't necessarily be ashamed that I like it. Because the way I see it, I'm like, if you're a fan of something, you should, like, I don't like the idea of like guilty pleasure. I think if you really like something, you should just embrace it, and I think that's what we also try to do on this podcast, is that, like, just, we're celebrating the things that we love.
I love that you brought up guilty pleasure, because there is, I think that idea has started to really go away, and it was really associated with the idea of stigmatizing fans, especially female fans. That probably does seem to be going away, but it does seem to me at younger ages, your fandom becomes so integral to a part of your identity that if people are attacking your fandom, it feels like an attack against you. And because you are going through that exploration phase and you're not confident enough in exactly who you are, those attacks can be really hard. And then you add on online communication with echo chambers where you're just surrounded by people who have the same ideas and you're getting that self-validation from them. If someone challenges you, it can really cause problems.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I'm in my 20s and I still feel like if someone attacks Padme Amidala, like it is a personal attack on me. But I also, I'm like, it's not her fault. But also, but I also think there's also, and I, again, this is why Chris, another reason why Kristen and I are such fangirls of your work. Because also it's a part of your identity, and like, also, there is this idea that it's not a guilty pleasure. And even if it's just the pleasure, there is value to it. There are things to be contributed. Like, I talk a lot on the podcast about how I've been able to use my passion for fandom to help me with my profession. Like, I created this role for myself in my job where I go and scout independent comic books to look for new IP for my company. That was something that we never really had done before. Because I knew the community and I was passionate about comics and going to conventions, because I would go to them anyway, like the ability to blend these two worlds of mine and in a way that's professionally and personally beneficial is valid. And that's why I love that you devote so much brain power and, dare I say, work to legitimize this and destigmatize this, because I think if more people embrace their fandoms, not as just a guilty pleasure or like something they can turn their brain off to, which, don't get me wrong, there's plenty of fandoms I love because I can turn my brain off to them. I think, you know, there'd be a lot more perhaps that we could contribute in all aspects of our life. Because you kind of talk about digital communication, do you think part of that's being dismantled because of the advances in digital communication, and also because like these people that we admire, like I can slide into so-and-so's DMs or they can retweet something I said, or like we've talked about this before on the podcast, but I would love to get your perspective on it. Like, because these boundaries between creator and consumer are more porous, do you think that's also informing kind of this evolution of fandom?
I think it is, in terms of both good and bad. I do think we're seeing more of a sense that the fans think that they have more control over the creation of something because of that porousness, that sense of like entitlement to have a say over what should or should not be in the content is problematic. So like the petition from the Game of Thrones fans, for example. But at the same time, I think it is good though when producers are willing to listen to their fans, recognize something that went wrong, something that's not working, and take the steps to fix it.
Scientists,
but at my university, they kind of call it the humanities, so I kind of
I love that. So speaking of really embracing and studying media and how it shapes us, your podcast, Pop Culture Lens, looks at past media through a contemporary lens. Why focus on past media and nostalgia? And what have been your discoveries exploring if these properties bear any relevance today for fans? That's awesome.
I think that makes sense. I mean, I'm even thinking about like the books that we would have studied in like high school English class and stuff like that. Like a lot of those old classics, you're still also reading like Wuthering Heights or something, and examining like what did that mean in that time period and stuff like that. So if we could do that for all of these old classic books, why can't we do that for like these popular films of, you know, 30, 40 years ago?
Yeah, and to take the classical book as an example, we just recorded an episode yesterday on Frankenstein, and the way that we were dissecting it was in giving us ideas about how to think about the time period then, how to think about all of the adaptations, giving Chris and I, who aren't experts in it, but our friend is, giving us different ways of even looking at the classical text.
That's really cool. That reminds me of, we did an episode with two of the organizers of the Jane Austen Summer Program that UNC Chapel Hill, our alma mater, hosts. And it's crazy because I think there's something so interesting, whereas certain pieces of pop culture, I don't know if Pride and Prejudice or Jane Austen novels were considered pop culture back then, but they still have a relevance to us nowadays. But I think there's also a value in discovering and exploring how it affected, because I guess technically during that time, perhaps those novels were considered pop culture. And it's because of history and time now they're literature. Oh my gosh, that's so interesting. The more you know. Okay, so we have loved this intense discussion about fandoms and fan cultures, but now we want to know a little more about you. And so it's time for our fandom Would You Rather game. Are you ready? Okay. What's your current ship?
It's a professional wrestling one, and I don't think I will ever see it be realized. And I'm okay with that because I've read some amazing fan fiction about it, and that's really good.
I love it. You're introducing us to a whole new world.
Going back to two worlds that maybe you're a little more familiar with, would you rather see Captain Kirk become a Jedi or see Luke Skywalker become captain of the Enterprise? I mean, if it's Chris Pine, Captain Kirk, sign me up. Okay. Okay. Speaking of thirsty characters I thirst for, would you rather be a hench person for Loki or Magneto?
Are we talking
up to you. Yeah. I mean, we feel you. We feel you. It's a vibe.
Would you rather go to a different planet with your favorite doctor or time travel with your favorite companion where you guys just take the TARDIS and run off?
Yeah, no, I'm going with the doctor. He can take me anytime.
10th doctor, I assume.
Well, yes.
And Kristen, you should take the last one. I'm sorry. I got very excited about the Loki Magneto question, as I often do.
Would you rather see your OTP break up or see your no TP get together in canon?
I'm all about people coming together. So that's the problem. Because that moment when they come together, that's the sweetest damn thing.
Even if it's your no TP?
Yeah.
Wow, you are mature. I've had my no TP get together on a TV show and I didn't take it well. And then where can we find your podcast, Pop Culture Lens?
That's on Podbean and Google Play and just Apple Podcasts because iTunes is dead.
So everyone check it out there. I think it's a great resource for everyone. Like I'm so excited to go back now and listen to more of the episodes that you've mentioned, especially the history of Comic-Con, because as someone who has proudly survived two San Diego Comic-Cons, I'm very excited to learn more about it. Gotcha. No, totally respect it. Carrie Lynn, again, thank you so much for joining us. Fangirls, if you enjoyed this conversation, please rate and review our podcast. You can also subscribe to us. We are also on Apple Podcasts because iTunes is dead. We're on Google Play. We're on Stitcher. We are many places where you listen to your favorite podcasts. Thank you again, Carrie Lynn. This was an absolute blast. Yay! Oh my God. That's like the biggest compliment. Oh my God. All right, fangirls, fanboys, fan people, we will see you in 2 weeks. Our theme song is California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.